Hey, hey, my fellow dream chasers, it's Princess Fizz here. Welcome to another episode of I Have a Dream Show, bringing you multimillionaires from around the world to hear their unique journeys to success, great business wisdom, free mentoring and inspiration. Now, if you're looking to boost your online presence as a small business owner and stand out from the noise, you have to check out my free 10-day course on how to create an amazing web TV show or podcast for any industry. Go to becomeamediapreneur.com and get instant access to the course, and I'll get you ready for launch within 10 days. If you're looking for a great way to build a strong network and land some high-paying customers, I recommend you check out LinkedIn training course at ihaveadreamshow.com/LinkedIn training. If you've seen my web TV shows and love my makeup, check out Moonstruck 3D Fiber Lashes, which is a best-selling product by Unique, at ihaveadreamshow.com/beauty. And if you prefer to watch the video shows, then you can go to ihaveadreamshow.com/shows, where there's a library of all the I Have a Dream shows to date. And don't forget to become a free member at the ihaveadreamshow.com website for access to free business and marketing trainings and other resources that will help you grow your business. And you'll get added to the newsletter straight to your inbox so you don't miss another show. So now take out your notepads and enjoy the show. Welcome to the I Have a Dream Show, guys. I mean, if you're new here, I've specially invited you here. It's a web TV online for entrepreneurs like yourself, where I bring on high-profile guests from around the world. And the reason why this show is a little bit different is because I really, really tap in to their mindset, right? I really tap into their journey, because what we see of them now is usually like their success stage. You know, we don't really get to see the back end story of it all, you know, the actual process of how it got to, how they are where they are today. So we're going to really talk about, you know, get really dig in deep with my guest today. And also there's an opportunity for a very special bonus at the end as well with my guest, so you'll find out about exactly what that is too. The value of the show is that it's interactive, so you can actually ask any questions that you may have. As you have got the special invite here, I usually prioritize your questions first, so make sure that you're using the chat box below. If it's not working or anything, just email me. I've got my email open as well at ihaveadreamshow@gmail.com. I'll be taking your questions there. But my guest today, oh my goodness, I've got this smile, right? My jaw is literally hurting because I've been this massive smile all week. As soon as I locked this guest in, I just couldn't wait. I've been counting down the days. He's known as a billion-dollar man because of his amazing ability of creating sales. He's created billions of dollars in sales. He's known he's actually the founder of an infomercial, which is called As Seen on TV. You must have heard of that. And he's also a shark on the Shark Tank show, which is where he invests in ideas that people bring on, a bit like Dragon's Den, I think. But yeah, so it's very, very popular in America. So please welcome, with a warm, warm welcome, it's Kevin Harrington coming in live from America. Thank you so much, Kevin, for joining the show today.
This is Fizz. Great to be here. Full disclosure, I'm not wearing the Unique lip gloss today.
Okay? So, I'll send it to you after.
You are, but I'm not, okay? Let's make it clear, okay?
I'll send it to you after.
My wife may like it, so that's good. All right. Thank you for having me today.
Oh, it's a huge, huge pleasure. I mean, thank you for blessing your presence on our show. But Kevin, I mean, we were having a little chat before the show, and I just highlighted the fact that it's so, so important to understand the mindset behind an entrepreneur. You know, when you have conversations around a dinner table, you get to really understand how their thinking is like, you know, what kind of decisions they make. Reading a little bit about your story, Kevin, I'm going to take you a little bit back. If you can take us through your journey. I know when you were very young, you were very entrepreneurial, but your mother didn't really understand that. How did you actually get away with that? You know, I mean, usually parents are very strict. They want you to go to school and finish your education and go to university, get a job. Tell me how you got away with that one.
Well, great question. My mother came from a banking family, so her father was the president of a bank, and my father, her husband, he was an entrepreneur. So I had a mixture of the two of them as their son, and so my mom wanted me to graduate and be a doctor or a lawyer or a banker.
Yes.
My father wanted me to be successful, but he really, I started when I was 11 working inside his entrepreneurial ventures. And so, you know, when I went to college, I actually did start college. I made it a couple of years. And I was doing well in school, but I just didn't really, it wasn't exciting. And I actually had a business that I'd started while I was in college. So I actually didn't want to go to school. I wanted to go to the business. So I ended up my third year at college. I had 25 employees, and I was going to school in the morning and getting to the office. I would get to the office at about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and all hell had broken loose already, you know? So I'm like, wow, I'm going to lose my business if I don't, get in early. So I basically quit college. So I'm not proud to say necessarily from my mother's standpoint that I'm a college dropout, but I had to do it, and it's not been bad for me since. So, you know, I just had the dreams of being on my own, and I just didn't want to, I didn't want to work for somebody else. I didn't want to, have to show up, have that 9-to-5 mentality. So my whole drive was about, creating my own destiny and having my own, vision of doing my thing on a day-to-day basis. And unfortunately, my father won out, I guess, because that's what I ended up doing. And my mom, for a while, was a little disappointed, but then she realized that's really was where I belonged.
That's brilliant. I mean, just on that note, Kevin, because, I mean, these two influential figures in your life, right, is your mum and your dad, and the totally different messages that you're getting. How did you kind of handle that emotionally? Because the thing is, your mum wants something, but your dad wants something, and maybe your dad's got more expectations of you in that way. They both got expectations, but it's like you're drawn apart. How did you kind of deal with that? How did you leave yourself the room to decide yourself? I mean,
no, that's a very good question. It's fact, I've never been asked that question, so I'm very pleased to be here today and be on your show and get some good stuff like this. So, I think what I decided was, at the end of the day, my mother, she was a great woman, God bless her, and she made it till she was 78 years old. My father made it. He passed away just recently. He was a week away from 93. So, God bless both of them. But my mother wanted me to be happy. And so, yes, she saw the entrepreneur side of me that, she helped me actually after she finally realized that, okay, I'm going to be an entrepreneur and that's what I want to be. You know, it's funny, because my oldest sister married a doctor. My second oldest sister married, I'm one of six kids. My other sister married a doctor and then a lawyer. And then my brother was a big corporate executive. So I was number four. So I guess she had enough of the corporate world with the other kids that she could say, well, you know what? Maybe an entrepreneur will be good here. But she finally accepted it. The challenge for me was, in the early days, it's very tough sometimes as an entrepreneur. Yeah. Building your business, getting the cash flow, becoming stable. And so my mother was like, along the way, she's like, now, are you sure you made the right decision? Okay. Yeah. And that was like, Mom, look, I'm in this for the long haul, and I'm very happy where I am. And yes, I made the right decision, because I had friends of mine that had gone through major success in their college careers and graduated the top of the class. And they had master's degrees and PhDs, but they weren't happy in the jobs they were in. And so I realized that I ultimately was going to be an entrepreneur. And by the way, when I was working for my father in these restaurants and got a taste of it, that's when I realized that I didn't have to tell my mom every day, hey, look, this is what I'm going to do. But it just ended up being the path that I chose. And she supported me then from there.
That's absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much for sharing, Kevin, so openly. Now, the other question I want to ask, which is probably touch some people, because when someone sees that you've got someone in the family that's an entrepreneur, they totally assume that maybe you've been given the silver spoon and maybe a head start, or maybe like your dad helped you out or whatever. You know, it's just such a straightforward assumption people make to get themselves out of that fact that, you know, you have to work hard. So have you ever had this in your life? Has anyone said that to you? And how do you actually deal with that? Was your dad quite strict when it came to entrepreneurial, being an entrepreneur, standing up on your own 2 feet?
No, you know, actually, my father, he was in the restaurant business. And so when I started as an entrepreneur, this business I mentioned, I was in college. Mm-hmm. I sold that company fairly, I only had the business about 3 years. So I was a young lad at the age of about 22. And I sold my company, and this is now 30 some years ago, for about $80,000. Okay. So I had all this capital. And then what I started was a business brokerage, real estate brokerage company. And this was the amazing transformation for me. So I went from running a business to now representing and selling 200 different businesses. So think about this. You come into the office every day. What's your job? To look at the books and records of 200 companies, flower shops, delicatessens, restaurants, import-export businesses, industrial, every kind of small business that you can think of, I was actually selling. So I got the inner workings, the percentages, the food costs, the rent costs. I saw the reasons why businesses were successful and why they were failing. Yes. I would sell a business. 2 years later, they closed it down because they stopped advertising because they thought that was a useless expense. And I'm like, no, that is an investment in getting the customers in your door. So that was the amazing transformation for me, is when I had a chance as an entrepreneur to sell hundreds of other entrepreneurial ventures and then see the inner workings of these companies. So what happened was, after my father retired from the restaurant business, what did he do? He came to work for me inside my business brokerage company. Wow. Because we sold tons of restaurants. And so he said, look, I've been in the restaurant. He had been in the restaurant business 30 years. So now he was going to use his 30 years of restaurant experience to get all the listings of all the restaurants for sale in the city. So we built a nice little business there. But people really knew by that time, I had already entrenched myself as this entrepreneurial business real estate broker at a very young age and got some press about it in town. So when my father retired, he came to work for me. It wasn't like, oh, Kevin's, you know, getting all this benefit from his father. I'd already been in business there for a number of years myself. So he actually, it was funny because people would come in and they'd meet me and my father, and people would say, oh, so do you work for your father? My father would say, no, it's the opposite. I work for my son, which was pretty powerful for him to say. So he and I had a very strong relationship, and he was actually he was a mentor for me for many years. So it was a very nice thing to have him part of my company. I got very lucky to have my father in my company for a number of years as I was building my business.
That's absolutely fantastic. And it just shows that you were quite independent, because usually when you've got a business in the family already, excuse me, when you've got a business in the family already, the children just kind of end up in it. So you kind of venturing out and doing your own thing and being that brave, you know, that courage that you showed to do that, instead of like going through the secure route of something already working and kind of just molding into it. So what gave you the idea for reselling then? Where did you get this idea from?
For selling the businesses?
Yes.
Yeah. So I went out, I had $80,000 in my pocket, and I'm like, I went to buy a business. So I went to a business brokerage company, and they showed me a couple small businesses. And I looked at dozens and dozens and dozens of companies. And now my venture, became finding a business for me. So I traveled the country looking at new franchise opportunities, business opportunities, existing businesses, startup businesses. Where can I put my money? Right. And everything that I looked at, I said, you know, there's certain positives to these, but I know I'm not going to want to. I already saw owning a restaurant. My father had to work 80 hours a week, and he was really limited ultimately in how much money he could make based on how many hours and how many people could sit in that restaurant. You know what I mean? It had a cap of income. So I didn't want a business that had a cap on the income that I could make. So I didn't want to be retail. I did not want a retail business, a restaurant business. I wanted something that had unlimited income. And so selling businesses all across the country, and I mean, I sold not only in my local area, but I then got into the franchising business where we took companies from one to hundreds of locations. Mm-hmm. So, and then I started getting equity in some of these deals. So that was, it really became a business for me to find a business to get into. And I said, there's so many opportunities, they're not for me, but you know what? I think I can make money sharing these with other people, because I actually spent a year of my life looking at hundreds of business opportunities. And so I said, let me get into the business of representing these opportunities to take to the public, because I saw the ups and the downs of these, and I knew what was and wasn't good for me. So I kind of fell into becoming a business broker myself, because I had a year's worth of experience analyzing all these business opportunities myself.
That's priceless knowledge. I mean, going through all these companies, you get to kind of see a pattern emerging amongst them. What's the common factors that make something successful? So we're going to talk about that in a minute, okay? Because I know that.
I'm going to give you one last point. So what I created then, so I sold the business. I'm sitting there at the closing table, and I say, so who's going to handle your insurance and your books and your accounting? And they're like, oh, wow, I do need somebody like that. So I then expanded it, and I said, you know what? These people need more than just someone to sell them the business. They need accounting. They need marketing. They need insurance. They need help. So I created the Small Business Center. I leased the whole floor of an office building in downtown Cincinnati, and it was the one-stop center for small businesses. We sold you the business, and then I rented space to an insurance agency, an accounting agency, an advertising agency, and then I got a percentage of all the different services that we booked for the person that bought the business. So we were now not just selling the business, but we were helping them. We do their business cards, their brochures, their marketing materials, their radio commercials, their accounting, their insurance, et cetera. And that Small Business Center grew into a national company. And that was then the birth of that whole business for me.
That's absolutely fantastic. Now, there's so many things that I want to ask you about that. But before I do, because it's kind of leading to the next part. So what happened after that, Kevin? I mean, so when you launched this business, it became very successful. It was going. What was your next move?
So what happened was one day I'm watching television and I just ordered cable TV, and I turn the TV on at midnight, and I see bars on the TV screen. Mm-hmm. And this is 1984, so this is 31 years ago. So I called the cable company and I said, I don't know if there's a problem after midnight that I'm not getting the transmission of the programs, but there's nothing on my channel at channel 30 it was. And what's going on? They say, oh, we don't have any programming for channel 30. We just go dark. And I'm like, you go dark? I'm like, well, wait a minute. I can give you some programs. So I said, you know, they said, what do you mean? I said, look, I'm dealing in all kinds of businesses. I sell 200 different kinds of companies. And let me just throw some products in there, and I'll give you a percentage of sales. We'll get a guy to pitch some stuff. And that was the birth of infomercials. So here I was. Really, the Small Business Center was a business that allowed me to get a pulse of everything going on in the marketplace. I got a chance to see the ups, the downs, the trends, the hot stuff, the ads that worked, the things that didn't. And now I was now as an entrepreneur, always keeping my mind open. I used to go to a couple dozen trade shows a year, because I had to understand if I'm selling flower shops, I got to know flowers. I got to know restaurants. So I'm going to the restaurant shows and the flower shows and the houseware shows, and I'm watching this guy sell. He was demonstrating a knife cutting through a Coca-Cola can, and he was selling a Ginsu knife. And that's when I said, I want to take that pitch and put it up on TV where I'm seeing bars on the screen. And that was the birth of my infomercial business. That was 1984. And so I started just filling all these airwaves, started locally, then I went nationally, and then I opened in London, came over your way in 1990. I came over to London when Sky Channel first launched, and I sat with Rupert Murdoch, and Rupert had just launched the Sky Channel, and I said, look, I'm this guy from America filling all the airwaves over there with these late night TV shows, and I see you could probably use some of this on Sky Channel. So we launched in 1990 over in England, and that went all across Europe. So that was my birth, getting into from 1984 into the early 90s into the infomercial and as seen on TV space.
Right. Kevin, amazing. Absolutely amazing. Now, there's two key points that I'm noticing about you already is that, first of all, you're very empathetic in a way that you find a pain of businesses, like, you know, the accounting part that they needed, the marketing part, you know, they needed the help. You felt the pain and you provided a service for it. Secondly, I've noticed that you are very, very alert when it comes to opportunities. So if the opportunity comes your way, is it because you know what you want and it just emerges and you recognize it? Is that what it is? So those two things I want you to kind of talk about.
I'll say this, that it starts, I call myself a very curious entrepreneur, okay? So I put my mind, and this is something for those that are listening right now, that a lot of people say, geez, why, you know, Kevin got so lucky, he got into this business brokerage business. Well, no, I was curious. I wanted to see how businesses operate. So I got into that. And so I call it curiosity overload. I did 2 dozen trade shows a year. And why? Because I was curious to see how all these industries work and what are the new product showcases going on in all these industries. And if you don't expose yourself to opportunities, so you're never going to, you know, you're never going to get there. And I say, if you always do what you've always done, you'll always get what you've always gotten, right? So on that note, by just exposing yourself to a lot of opportunities, now you can just kind of sift through them and decide which ones make sense and which ones should you act on. So if you only have one thing to do and you do it, it might be the wrong thing. But if you've got 2 dozen things to look at, and now you can analyze those 2 dozen things and pick the top one or two, you've got a much better chance of finding something that's going to be successful.
That's amazing. So it's basically showing up, isn't it, Kevin? It's literally showing up to as many places as you can. So you've got choices that you can make rather than waiting for things to come to you. You have to go to them and create your opportunities, right?
Exactly. I mean, I was on a call earlier today. They said, so what are you doing in the next week? I said, Monday I'm at the Toy Fair in New York. There'll be 100,000 people there. I'm speaking there. Wednesday I'm in San Diego at the Traffic and Conversion Conference. Then I fly to Honolulu for a presentation to a group. So, you know, I'm looking forward to that next week because I'm going to be seeing entrepreneurs in all different industries all over the world. And so by the end, 10 days from now, I guarantee you I'm going to have a couple new deals that I'm going to have in my pocket. So if you ever get short of projects or income opportunities, you just have to open your eyes and go places and make it happen.
Absolutely wonderful. Absolutely brilliant. Now, that's $1 million advice, guys, right? It's priceless. So Kevin, so when you went into, okay, we'll move a little bit long. I know we're very short on time, guys. We've only got 45 minutes, right? So I'm going to try to take some questions of yours. They're pouring in, Kevin, so bear with me, guys. When you did your infomercial, it became a huge success. I mean, what challenges did you face? Is there any point in your ventures that you kind of want to give up? Is there any kind of point? How do you push through that faith, feeling that you get?
That's a great question. And I'm going to say this. I'm going to give you another tip for all of our listeners right now, because I started the infomercial business and there was a big problem I had. Yeah. I had no money, okay? So I was a young entrepreneur. I was 20 some years old. I had no capital and I needed millions. So how do you get millions of dollars? Young entrepreneur, you've got no sales, no business, and you're trying to get rolling. So this is what I did, and this is what I'm going to tell everybody here today is the first step of starting your business. You might be a really energetic entrepreneur. You're full of great ideas. You got a great business model. Surround yourself with an advisory board. And this is so vital because right now I'm launching a new business. I'm moving from television to mobile, and I'm going to talk maybe a little bit about that today. Yes. And so people are saying, but Kevin, you have no experience in mobile. So what I've done is I put an advisory team together, and we're selling a line of products that's going to be, it's called Star Shop is what we're launching. It's a mobile shopping app that is celebrity-based beauty products, health and fitness products, etc. So what did I do? I lined up a whole team of advisors. I have the president of L'Oreal Beauty out of France. He was president for 10 years. He's retired now, but he's now on my board of advisors. And so I've lined up an operations person, a mobile expert, a beauty expert. And so now I put this whole team together. And we have this amazing track record of a portfolio of expert entrepreneurs that have been there and done that in every aspect of business. And so now we've raised $20 million around this venture. And so I've got a track record, but I don't care how strong. I mean, I've done billions and billions of dollars, but I'm in a new business model now. So I need to get the experts. So every entrepreneur out there listening right now can assemble a team of advisors. I've joined 20 board of directors over the last 10 years, and I get a little equity along the way. I help, I advise, but you know what? I get calls from small entrepreneurs that call me and they say, Kevin, would you join my advisory board? And you know what? Every now and then on the right terms and conditions, just because I still like to give back to the entrepreneurial community, I do. I join it and I help them. And I don't know if you know this or not, but I was the founder of the Entrepreneurs Organization, EO. It started with YEO, but it's now we're in 45 countries, 200 cities around the world. And London has a nice chapter. I was just in Shanghai meeting with the Shanghai chapter. It's unbelievable what's going on over in China. So, you know, I like to give back to the community. And that's why I'm talking to you here today, Princess Fizda, because I don't want to help any of the entrepreneurs out there. But start with that board of advisors.
Excellent, excellent tip. Guys, that's a beautiful tip because it's really important. You don't have to know anything. You don't have to know everything, sorry. I mean, you don't have to be experts in different areas to get things going. And I think that's a beautiful advice, Kevin, to leverage other people's success and leverage other people's expertise in certain areas to get your project going. So I love that. Now, Kevin, I know, we've got so much to talk about. Okay, so... Right, now a very important question. As an investor of, as a shark on Shark Tank television show, I really want to ask you this. When, regardless of whatever their idea is, okay, as soon as when you're sitting on the panel and someone comes through the door, is the decision made within seconds, the way that the entrepreneur carries himself, or, it doesn't matter what their pitch is, the decision is already made pre-hand that if this is the right person I want to work with. Is that something like that?
Okay, so good question. At Shark Tank, it's like, you know, they call me a U.S. a dragon from the United States, right? Dragon's Den is such a big show around the world also. But so there's actually in some cases a curtain in front of us. We don't know what's coming. So we don't have – a lot of people say, I'm sure you've already been given all the background and all this information on what's coming out, right? So, no, we have no idea what the product is, who the people are, and they want to see – there's 16 cameras in this shoot when we're shooting, and – so they want to see our reaction to these products, you know, when we see and hear what it is. Now, I give people the benefit of the doubt. I think I think I don't make my mind up in seconds, but by 3 minutes in, I know whether or not I'm in or not, because I have a real gut feel for the product, for the business, and then for the entrepreneur. Because sometimes I like the entrepreneur, but I don't like the business. Other times I like the business, but I don't like the entrepreneur. When I like both, that's when I do the deal. So, and so sometimes it takes, I say the most important part of going on a show like Shark Tank or Dragon's Den is learning how to do a perfect pitch, okay? Because that's so important. You know, I've seen people take the same business and pitch it one way and get absolutely no interest, and pitch it a different way and get extreme interest. So, creating a perfect pitch, I'm going to give you just three tips. I call it a tease, a please, and then a seize. That's three simple steps. You have to tease, say something really very powerful or attention getting on the front end to get the attention and talk about a problem. And then you mentioned me, I'm like a problem solver, right? Well, that's what a lot of inventors do. They solve problems. So tease me with a problem, get my attention, then please me with the benefits and the features and why this makes so much sense, and then seize me with an offer that I can't refuse. So that's part of creating a perfect pitch, is tease them, please them, and then seize.
Excellent. Absolutely fantastic. Now, you must have, as you've gone through thousands of inventors and the products that you've come across, is there certain kind of things that you see, even when you were like reselling the businesses, is there certain things that you've noticed that a business should have or the entrepreneur should have to be successful?
Yes. So the first thing I mentioned, and I've learned the hard way, I made a $500,000 investment. I loved the entrepreneur and I loved the business, and she didn't have a board of advisors or a team around her. Mm-hmm. So she took the money and just did foolish things with it. So a good team would not have let her spend the money the way she did. Now, I should have been there a little bit more myself also, but so you've got to have the team. Secondly, you got to have a good marketing plan. And a lot of folks say, oh, okay, I'm going to, I want to know what's the use of proceeds. If I'm going to make an investment, if somebody comes to me and they're like, Kevin, I want you to be my partner. Will you invest in me and my business? So I say, okay, let's say I gave you $1 million. Where are you going to use the money? What's your use of proceeds? If you don't have a good use of proceeds, then I'm not going to invest the money for sure. And let me explain the best use of proceeds. One time a guy says, well, I want to buy the equipment to manufacture and the product. I'm going to buy a manufacturing plant. I'm going to buy some real estate for the office, and I'm going to buy fancy office furniture and all this. No. I want to know, how are you going to market the business? Where, how are you going to get new customers? That I want to see use of proceeds. I want to see it going towards marketing, towards building the business, not towards the physical parts of it, like the office furniture and the manufacturing plant and all of those kinds of things. So many people forget that the most important thing as an entrepreneur, me, that's going to invest, I want to see how you're going to go from $1 million to $5 million to $10 million to $20 million in sales, not just that you know how to manufacture the product and handle the customer service. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely fabulous. Thank you so much. And another thing I think is really important to highlight is when someone goes to ask for finance, right, they've got a plan and everything, they want money to take it off. How do you know if that person's serious, if they're not losing anything in a way that they're not investing either? So some people like to kind of use other people's money. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. They haven't got that kind of drive, and they're relying on someone else to make it happen for them. Where's the fine line in that? I mean, how do you know when someone's serious or not?
That's a great question also. I think because I mentioned the one investment, and I'll go back to that. I put up $500,000 and it was gone in 6 months. So because they had nothing to lose. And so I do think that sometimes what I'll ask for is some kind of a personal pledge, whether it be something that some kind of pain that they're going to have.
Yes, yeah, they have to have some sort of pain.
Maybe, you know, whether I decide to go against it or not, but maybe if they have some real estate or do they have any assets at all that I might be able to attach in some fashion. And, you know, look, some people don't have the cash to do what they need, but they might have a little bit of some kind of asset somewhere. But certainly, I also will want to attach, I like to be able to be able to attach my investment to a asset of the business also. So if there's some underlying assets, I want to have, like, I call it a first lien position. It's almost like if a bank's going to loan you money on a house and you don't pay, what do they get to do? They get to foreclose and take the house back, right? So if I'm going to loan you money or invest money on the business and you run through all the money and you're not successful, there may be some underlying assets that I want to be first in line to be able to attach. So it's just good business. And if somebody is reluctant to do that, it makes me nervous then. Yeah. So it's a good thing to pursue if I can.
Excellent. Absolutely fantastic. I'm whizzing through questions because of time, but forgive me, Kevin, if I'm not interacting with your answers, because they're absolutely fabulous. I could elaborate on them, but we've got so much to get through. Okay, so another thing, Kevin, is when the power of no, okay, the power of no. So some people, when they get that face blank no, they probably go away and wait for death or something, and they give up on their dream. I've noticed on my journey, whenever I've had a no, it's actually fired my fuel even more to go ahead and do it anyway, just to prove that I can. Have you had any kind of experience in your work where you've actually said no to someone, but it's actually been the best thing ever for them?
Well, yes, and on Shark Tank, a lot of times we would tell people they'd borrowed against their house, they'd leveraged, they quit their jobs, and they're just going down this spiraling path of destruction, and they're not going to make it happen. So I would tell them, look, this is something you have to stop right now, because you still maybe have a chance to, and some people maybe hadn't quit their job yet, right? But they were thinking about it. So I try to grab an entrepreneur at the right time before I see them go too far. I've seen entrepreneurs borrow against their house and put their life savings into projects that I say, don't, please don't do this. So I will tell you, the power of no can be very good. In fact, when I first, went to England, I was the infomercial guy from the States. My very first meeting was with WH Smith Television, and they told me, they said, Kevin, let us just tell you something, okay? You have these 30-minute commercials from the United States. You're coming into England, and you want to bring these on TV here in our country? Guess what? We don't even like 30-second commercials. Uh-huh. BBC doesn't even run a 30-second. Why would you think your 30-minute stuff is going to work? Go home. It's not going to work. They slammed the door in my face. And they were pretty brutal about it, actually. So, yeah. I mean, the bottom line is that I took that as a major incentive for me to go and come back with a game plan. And so then I found out that satellite TV was different than broadcast like BBC and the terrestrial television stations were. And that's when I cut a satellite deal and made it all happen. So it invigorated me to go and really want to come back into England and prove all those folks wrong, which I did about a year later, okay? So power of no can sometimes be enough to get you over the hump, to really take it and let the people know that no is only a temporary situation in many cases.
Excellent. Absolutely fabulous. Right, we've got, okay, if you don't mind, okay, we can take a couple of questions because they have especially come on.
Absolutely.
We've got lovely Sherry. Thank you so much, Sherry, for joining the I Have a Dream show today. And she's asking, if I don't have my own products, and I've no idea, what kind of advice can you give me to create something, to get an idea if I haven't got one?
Okay. So This is what I would suggest, and I don't know where she's based, but in the U.S., do you know what country she's in, or is she in England?
I'm not sure, actually. It doesn't say. New York.
Great. So she's got a great advantage. Yeah. In New York City, I'm going to be there on Monday at the Toy Fair, right? So I go to 35 trade shows a year. In the month of January, I did 5 trade shows. I did the Consumer Electronics Show. I did the Outdoor Show. I did the Sports and Licensing Show, et cetera, et cetera. Next week, I'll be doing 3 more shows. And so why do I do these? First thing I do is there's a new product showcase at every single one of these shows. And you go to these new, some of them are big, they're their own little sections of the trade show. And you get so many ideas. You get all the trends that are coming up. These are the new things that are going to be out in the industry in the next year. And so what I do is I'm grabbing the brochures from these new product showcases, and I actually call these people. I don't physically make every call myself. I have people that do this. But I then contact these companies and say, hey, look, I'm interested in some new products. I saw your product at the such and such trade show, and let's talk. So this, because what happens for me, because I do shopping channel distribution, I do infomercials, I do retail, somewhere in my distribution platform, I have an opening for some of these new products. But if there's somebody in New York, she can go to the Jacob Javits Center every single week. There's hundreds and hundreds of trade shows. I recommend just starting to go to as many of these as you can get into. Some of them are free, and you don't even have to pay to get in. You just need like a business card, and it will open your mind like you wouldn't believe. Also, go to chambers of commerce meetings, entrepreneurial meetups. There's now with the internet, there's dozens and dozens of things on the internet you can hook into. So many ways to find new things, new and exciting opportunities.
That's absolutely fantastic advice. Thank you so much, Kevin. Okay, I've got one reminder. Thank you, Alice, for reminding me. Thank you for tuning in today. She's reminding me about network. She spoke to me before, and she said to me, please ask this question. Okay, network marketing. When someone wants to join a network marketing opportunity, right, so they haven't got their own products, but they like someone else's products, and they want to resell.
Yes.
Now, you've got thousands of other distributors doing the same thing, okay? How do you stand out? How do you sell differently? How do you become different, like the purple cow that Seth Godin talks about? How do you be different? How do you place yourself?
By the way, I love network marketing because I think it allows people that don't have a lot of money and don't have all the product development. Network marketing companies spend big money to develop unique products. So I think the key thing in network marketing is that you have to develop, the key to success in network marketing is being able to recruit some good people under you that that will build your organization, right? Because in network marketing, if you're only selling products, you're going to have a limited amount of income. Yes. If you are able to recruit good distributors, then you're going to be successful. So the most important thing to me in network marketing is being able to provide support services to the people that you bring into your network. Mm-hmm. So that means, I'm not a network marketing junkie by any means, but I own equity in a couple of companies. So what I suggest is providing a once a week, whether it's an in-person facility that people can go to, or a once a week something on the internet. You need to, when you recruit people, they don't know how to recruit people. They don't know what to do all the time. And a lot of times people, they do need some hand-holding. So you have to be the one that says, look, I'm not only going to recruit you, but I'm going to support you. I'm going to help you. Anybody that you want to bring into this, let me be the one to help you bring them in. And this is what I'm going to do. There was a guy that was one of the most successful guys I had seen in network marketing about 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. And he would have these dinners and would you know, every now and then fly somebody around and stuff. So and he really went out of his way to support his downline. And so I think that's how you rise to the top, because people want to come to your meetings, They need your support. They look up to you. You have to become a leader is what it's all about. So if you don't take on that leadership role where you provide a support mechanism for your downline, it's a lot tougher to build a business.
Excellent, excellent. It's harder to duplicate as well, isn't it? Because that's what it's all about, duplication. So the more leaders you create in your organization, the better. So I love that advice. Thank you so much. Okay, Kevin, we've got another one coming in. We've got quite a few. I'm trying to sift through them to see the ones that are relevant. But we've got someone saying that using social media nowadays, it can help you expand if you've got a small budget. Does Kevin agree? If so, is there any advice you can give with social media?
Social media is powerful, and there's some real good experts in that arena. I know a little bit about it. I use it. But, yes, I mean, I use Facebook. I use LinkedIn. If you utilize, I mean, like right now, of course, I get a lot of people that come to me these ways because, you know, I've been on television and whatever, so that's a little easier for me, obviously. But the key thing, if you look at some of these YouTube stars and celebrities, they started from nothing and all of a sudden they've got millions of followers. Mm-hmm. That is the most unbelievable way to market yourself and building a following. So, you know, the key thing there is creating some good content and some good reasons why people will be following you. So,
Be remarkable. Yeah, do something outstanding.
You know what we're talking about because you're in the business of getting people to follow you and come to your programs. And so you have to stand out a little bit and create some unique things.
Yeah, I think
social media is very good.
Yeah, because I've noticed word of mouth has always been the most powerful because, you know, with ads, you're kind of buying attention, you know? But when you do something great and people talk about you, I've noticed it's so much more powerful. And it's how I've actually been able to grow Dream Show because I don't really do much advertising with Dream Show. It's all about word of mouth, like creating aha moments and, you know, all these things. So that's absolutely wonderful. Okay, Kevin, another really good question coming in. Let me just try and get my head around this one. But it's basically she's saying... how do you make your hours short but leverage as much as you can? So I think what she's trying to say, Amy, thank you very much for joining the I Have a Dream Show. She's saying that how do you spend, like, you know, normally business owners spend like 18 hours a day, you know, working and, you know, even if they're making like six figures, seven figures, so much of the time's going away. How do you shorten your hours as much as possible but doesn't affect your income?
Okay, I mean, I think I understand the question, but I think one of the key things I try to do is I'll delegate a lot of things, and let's say you don't have a big staff that you can delegate to. I mean, I focus on the things that I do best, and so I surround myself with others that can help me. Now, let's say you don't have a budget for a staff. All right, well. You know, over the years, what I've done is I've delegated to people and I've made them partners in some of these other deals. Okay. So if you don't have enough time in the day to do everything, bring people in to help you and let them have a little piece of the action. Okay. Right. Because I'm doing this right now with a couple of projects. There's some things that I could be doing 100% myself, but I don't have the time, the 2 hours a day that it might take. So I've got the 20 minutes a day that I can spend on it with a partner that I'm going to give 30% of the profits to. So I get 70% of the profits. I give 30% of it away, and they run the day-to-day, and I just do the high level, and that way I can do 10 of these instead of only one. So you know, it's time management. It's deal management. It's also not doing – you don't do everything yourself because it's too mundane, it's too time-consuming, and it also will fry you in terms of your mental state, right? So keep yourself focused on the high-level stuff that you're best at and get rid of the other stuff and delegate it out.
Excellent. And it's also kind of figuring out the worth per hour as well. I mean, if it's admin work you're doing that you can pay $10 an hour for someone to do, then you should delegate that and get that out of your kind of zone.
Right.
So, That's brilliant. Thank you so much, Kevin. Oh my God, people are getting excited. Guys, I have to kind of close in on the questions a little bit because time is running out. Kevin, are you okay for time? I know we've over 45 minutes,
let's take one more question and then let's wrap it. Okay. It's been a great session. I really enjoy this.
Yeah. I told you. Okay, we've got Andrew coming in. Thank you so much, Andrew, for joining the I Have a Dream Show today. How does Kevin think of money? Which is a very good question. I love this one. How do you think of money? It's always changing. How do you not get attached? I think I understand what you're saying. It's a very good question. I love that.
So I think of money as like it's an opportunity cost. Okay, so there is a finite amount of it that anyone generally has, and even like a Mark Cuban who has billions, you know, he's only allocated a certain amount of it to investing in small deals, right?
Right.
So I think, you know, I look at money as something that is finite, and once I invest it, that's earmarked for something, and it's now, you know, it's got to bring back a return. Yeah. So, you know, I'm going to use money. It has to be something that goes into deployment, but brings back more. Okay. So, because if you put it in deployment and it's gone, then your finite amount can become smaller and smaller, and you can be out of money, and that's not good. So I think of money. It's a great asset. It's money is to be used to build a business. It's to be used to deploy, but bring you back either more sales. Some return on investment is what's required. So with money, you need an ROI, a return on investment. And I also, people say to me, what is your sweet spot, Kevin? What do you like to invest in? Well, I don't want to put $1 million up today that's going to take 5 years to get back. I want to see something turn in about a year to an 18-month cycle. So that I can, you know, deploy it quicker and quicker, because things are changing so fast out in the marketplace right now that, you know, right now I maybe put $1 million up, and if I can get back triple that in 18 months, maybe in 18 months I can put that up and get back 5 times or 10 times that in a quick turn. So I just don't like to have it deployed for too long a period of time. So it's an asset that's got to bring back an ROI in some quick fashion.
Excellent point there. And on that note, I really want to take this question because it's just literally feeding off what you just said. I can't pronounce your name. Is it Sasha? Sasha, she's saying, right, when do you know when to give up? Like, if you've got an idea and it's not kind of going, it's not getting you anywhere, and you have got the passion for it, but basically what she's trying to say is, when do you know when to quit and kind of move on, and not kind of, you know, get into that loony behavior of it's going to work, but it's not really. Yeah. So.
Well, in my business, I think every industry needs to look at this analysis. I look at the analysis of what does it cost to get a new customer, and what is the lifetime value of that customer, right? Yeah. So if it costs you $100 to get a new customer, and the lifetime value is only, you know, is $150, then you've got to look at the math and see, you know, can I conceivably make this work, right? Yeah. You know, so how quickly does the revenue come in to cover the acquisition cost? Uh-huh. And if you can't recover your acquisition cost quick enough, you may not be able to weather the storm. So, you know, so I look for industries that have continuity and have longer and bigger lifetime value. So if I like to have an industry that has, let's say, a $10 acquisition cost and a $1,000 lifetime value, right? That's a really good return on investment. If, like I used the analogy, $100 acquisition cost, $150 lifetime value, that's not very good. You know, you maybe can make money, but you're only making a little bit of money, and it might take a year to make $50 lifetime value. So you look at acquisition cost to customer, lifetime value, how long does it take to get there, and then decide, you know, is this an industry that makes sense, and or can you lower the acquisition cost, and can you increase the lifetime value of that customer? So try to work those two metrics, and if you're not able to, that's when you have to quit, because if you can't lower your cost to acquire and increase the, if you're not making enough money now, you got to either lower the cost to acquire or increase the lifetime value, or you're not going to survive. So those are the metrics. It becomes a numbers game, ultimately, is how you got to look at it.
That's absolutely fantastic advice. I love that, because if you've got a product that only a person will buy just once out of their whole life, you know, there's no really point of getting involved in something like that, is there? Right. It should be constantly someone buying from you all the time.
Yes.
Like most.
Yeah, like I'm launching a mobile app right now.
Yes.
And our whole analysis of the success and failure of it is going to be, can we get people to come to the app on a daily or weekly basis? Because
right.
if we get 1 million downloads our first week, and people download it but only come the first day they downloaded it, and that's it,
yes,
the metrics of that are not going to prove successful. We're going to have an unsuccessful business. So you've got to have a continuity in the customer. I've only got 1 minute because I have another
call. I know. Oh, my goodness. I have to wrap this up so quickly. Okay, brilliant. I'm not going to take – okay, so, Kevin, thank you so much for your wonderful contribution to the I Have a Dream Show today. I ask everybody a couple of things before you go. One thing is that the mission of the I Have a Dream Show is for the viewer – to learn one thing that's impactful in their personal and business life that transcends to generations. So one kind of thing that you can share that they will take away today, if they haven't so far, of course, I'm sure there's lots, but that will transcend to generations. What is that one change that someone needs to have?
My father always said this, and I believe most people, they focus in just one area a lot of times. You have a job, and that's your sole source of income. Or you have a business, and that's your sole source of income. I always have another opportunity that I'm looking at, that I'm building off to the side. It's don't keep all your eggs in one basket.
Yes. Yes.
And so I always want to make sure that you've got that something else on the side that's going to be residual, that if this blows up, I mean, what happens if your business blows up, if your job blows up, what else do you have? So always have... call it a weekend job, a weekend business, weekend wealth, weekend warriors. I like to say, you know, even if you are a hardcore employee type of person, uh-huh. And I don't think there's that many of those listening today, if you are an employee, have something you do on the weekend to generate extra income, because you can always go to that area to build if something happens to the thing you're involved with. So my father, even though he worked 80 hours a week in the restaurant business, he always had at least one or two other businesses that he had that he put a few hours into that provided not only an income stream but a release and something to focus on additionally. So don't keep all your eggs in one basket. Keep some extra opportunities, and that's why I say maybe hit a couple extra trade shows or something to see some new opportunities and be open-minded to these opportunities when they come to your forefront.
Absolutely beautiful. And there's a lady called Ingrid Prescott. She's going to meet you at the Toy Fair. She'll be there as well. But Kevin, as you are on the I Have a Dream Show, I mean, I'm just so keen to hear, what is your dream?
Well, my dream right now, I'm starting this new business. It's called Star Shop, and it's a celebrity app. We're going to be selling celebrity products, and we have 250 celebrities like Nicki Minaj and Adam Levine and a lot of famous, you know, Beyonce and Jay-Z, and they're going to be selling, we're selling their products on our mobile app. So my dream is to build this into a $1 billion business. We launch in May, uh-huh. And I'm going to have this toy product called Laser Pegs at the Toy Fair. So have them look me up next Monday at the show. I'll be there. And I also am going to make an offer. You're going to send this out, but one person that's listening today, we're going to cut a special deal. I'm going to mentor them on a very special arrangement through I Have a Dream show that we're doing right now. So you're going to get some details of that out to the folks. And I'm gonna be able to bring that person back in a future show and say they had a dream, they met me on this show, and we're gonna build their business. So come up with that. That's my dream, is to help somebody listening to our show today. So thank you for having me. Great pleasure, and I'll see you soon.
That honor is mine. I'll let you go now, Kevin. You've been absolutely extraordinary. You spent an hour with us today, and thank you, guys, for tuning in. Kevin, can I just, very important question I need to know, spiritually, how important is it spiritually to grow alongside material gain? Because you've got everything now. I mean, you've experienced wealth, you've experienced the material gain, but you know, people need to reach that higher self. You know, how important is it to keep growing spiritually? How do you grow spiritually? Is it by giving back? What is it?
You got to give back. I give back. I do programs like this. I'm part of the Entrepreneurs Organization. I believe you the more you give out, it's going to come right back. And not right back. Sometimes it comes back 20 years later, by the way.
Yes.
So,
yes.
It's that mentality I've had all my life as an entrepreneur, and that's what I'm doing today here with you. So God bless everybody listening, and thanks for having me.
Thank you so
much. Onward and upward. Two thumbs up to Princess Fizz, all right?
Thank you so much. Thank you. You take care. Bye-bye. Thank you, Kevin.
Bye-bye. Take care. Bye-bye.
Guys, thank you so much for tuning in today. It's been absolutely amazing. As you've heard, the absolutely amazing guest, I mean, I'm just in awe of him because I've been following him for a while as well. And everything he's shared today has just been absolutely brilliant. So the last thing I want to say is just follow your dreams and, you know, take massive action. Don't be afraid of risk, and make sure you've got that passion to get you through those challenges and to get you to reach those goals. Make them a reality so I can bring you on future shows and share your dream and your journey on the show as well. And there's also the competition that Kevin spoke about. There's one person that he'll actually work with on a special arrangement. So keep an eye out on your emails. I'll send you the information for that, how you can actually apply for that. It'll probably be like a lucky draw or something. I'll do a competition. But thank you again. Hey, it's Princess Fizz again. I hope you found this show extremely, extremely valuable. Do like and comment and leave a review for this show. And don't forget to subscribe and share with your friends, whoever it will benefit. Go to ihaveadreamshow.com/shows if you want to watch the video recording of this show. And leave a comment, write to me. I'd love to hear from my listeners about any suggestions, any takeaways that you had, any suggestions for improvements, and make sure that you sign up to the newsletter as well so you don't miss another episode and you get notified by email. I love you loads. Dream big, chase those dreams, make them a reality so I can bring you onto the I Have a Dream show and share your unique journey with the world.